I first met Wynton when his brother introduced me to him 43 years ago at the Berklee College of Music in Boston when he was touring with Art Blakey and getting big time noticed at age 19. Wynton Marcellus, welcome.
Okay, man. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as well. After 50 years plus of playing the horn, does it get easier or harder?
It's the same. As it was always. It always has its challenges and its benefits.
Do you still pick it up every day?
Almost every day. I mean, if I'm not playing concerts yet, then you have to with the trumpet.
The trumpet is an unforgiving mistress, isn't she?
Yes, she don't play with you. She's for real. Yes.
Is it good to have the Lincoln Center Orchestra back on the road after COVID?
Yeah, we played through COVID. Actually, I mean, we were out on the road with a septet form of the orchestra that played in the cold. We played outside concerts every chance we got in the spring of the pandemic when people could get on the road. The orchestra got together, and we were together through this whole time. So, yeah, we've been also active when we first could get active a year ago. Even the summer before that, we went to Europe. But we've been in the saddle the whole time.
The program is different Friday night and Saturday night. Friday night, you have a special guest at Chicago Symphony Center with the Lincoln Center Orchestra. Who's the special guest?
He's the great Nasir Shama. He's a genius, master of oud. He is a musicologist. He's a composer. We're playing 7 to 9 of his new compositions that we've done big band arrangements of. He's a UNESCO ambassador of goodwill and peace in the world. He is a founder of an education called the Oud, Arab Oud House, of which there's 8 cities that have his schools to teach students and take them to master playing of this oldest, probably the oldest instrument in the world. He's such a fantastic musician in person. I mean, I don't even know what to say about him as a person. He is one of the most humblest, and his virtuosity is without question.
And then Saturday night, an all-Ellington program, is Duke Ellington still America's most prolific and maybe underappreciated artist?
Oh, no question about that. It's over 2,000 compositions, 800 records. I mean, nobody's even competing with him at this point. But this show is called The Ladies of Ellington. He wrote more diversity of pieces about ladies than any other composer, I think, American composer. And we're going to play a theme of everything from Portrait of Ella Fitzgerald, which is 4 great movements, to a contemporary kind of sounding piece called The Clothed Woman, to the classics like Sophisticated Lady and Satin Doll, to things that may be unknown like Paris Stairs from Paris Blues, Lady Mac from Such Sweet Thunder. So he was always writing things. He's inspired endlessly by women.
Is Duke Ellington's legacy complicated by Billy Strayhorn?
Not at all. It's jazz. They were both great. Strayhorn worked for Ellington. He wrote great pieces. He also did things on his own. He wrote in the language of Duke Ellington, a language that Duke Ellington developed and that Duke Ellington was the master of. Duke included Billy Strayhorn, even on the cover of the Nutcracker Suite. It's he and Billy Strayhorn. If anything, it's one of the most democratic of relationships. And Duke's greatness was already solidified before Strayhorn joined the band.
I want to get back to democracy and music here in a second. You're a terrific classical trumpet player as well. You decided when you went with Blakey, maybe even before that, to stick with jazz. And you're still a terrific classical player, obviously. But is playing jazz an art where playing classical music is more of a skill?
No, I can't say that. But my original intention was to be a jazz musician, to try to be like my father and the other musicians that I grew up loving. I didn't necessarily like their music, but I liked them. And I liked the feeling of a jazz music. They were always hip. They knew a lot. They were under the radar because they didn't have a lot of audience. But they were, you know, they had a belief and an understanding in things that were uncommon at that time. I grew up in the civil rights movement. So everything about kind of social, our country, all these things were in the air. Vietnam War was going on. King was assassinated. Kennedy. Jazz musicians were always on top of all of that. I used to go see concerts like Max Roach and Art Blakey, take consciousness music. I always wanted to be a part of that kind of that movement and that way of being. I love classical music. A guy gave me a recording, and I listened to it of a great French trumpet player, Maurice André, And I started listening to classical music and studying the music in school and loving first the trumpet literature and then just the music itself. It takes artistry to play all the kinds of music. In jazz, you're like a composer as well as a performer. It requires another type of virtuosity. But there's no need to pit them against each other. When I was younger, I would always do that and say, well, I like jazz better. Yeah, I'm a jazz musician. But I think that both require have a virtuosity and a skill and are difficult to play. Jazz is the style we play. It comes from this country, and it has a more fundamental relationship to our democracy than classical music because, once again, the music, like what I said about Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn, before Billy came to the band, Duke had already written 250 great songs. They were already great composers and people playing in the style of what we call classical music or orchestral music before America even came into a musical consciousness.
That insight and voice belongs to Wynton Marsalis. He'll be in concert with Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra at Chicago's Symphony Center this Friday and Saturday nights, 8 p.m. showtimes. You know, you talk about categorization. You don't want to pit one against the other. Trumpet players are infamous for getting into it, arguing about various talents, as you know. Is it a fool's errand to attempt to categorize players? In other words, can Miles Davis, Al Hurt, Sweets Edison, and Bud Herseth from the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, can they even be compared to each other?
Not really, but it's fun to do it. And for me, they were all people. They were like mentors of people I knew that I loved, whose records I listened to, who I talked to. And I didn't compare them to one. They played different types of music and forms. But it's always good just to talk about something. You can pick whatever you want, and you can come up with whatever themes you want and discuss them. It's all arbitrary. It's not going to have an impact on what they play in either case.
Back to democracy and music being part of the fabric of America. I've read and I've heard you say that your core beliefs and foundations based on the principles of jazz, in other words, individual creativity, collective cooperation, gratitude, and good manners, being somewhat sophisticated and facing adversity with persistent optimism. So, is rap music or hip-hop music in general, culturally speaking, a net gain or a net loss in your mind?
You know, I've been talking about this for 40 years, man. The public has decided they love that. I no longer have anything to say about that kind of stuff. I feel like any language that calls people negative words, talks about people in a negative way, puts down other people, I'm not a fan of that type of expression. I'm certainly not a fan of it in the mainstream. If it's somewhere on the side and people who really want to get it can get it, great. It should be made available. We're adults, you know. But I've said for years also, not connected to rap, just connected to our music in general, the pornographication of the public space is not good for younger people. And you're seeing it now with all the mental health issues we have. But we have decided as a society that our younger people are a market and that their sexuality is something that we should sell to. And then we add insult to injury by acting like they know more about music and art than we know. Kids, I mean, 11 or 12-year-old doesn't know anything about music. And they're easily exploitable, and they are. We have, as a culture, decided to do that. We've always had the line of exploitation for black people, call themselves names, make a fool out of ourselves. That goes all the way back to the 19th century. It's an American pastime. I have never been a fan of it and remain not a fan. That's not to say all of hip-hop is that. I'm not saying all of anything. I'm saying that in the mainstream of our country, there's too much violence, too much pornography, too much misogyny, too much use of the word and disrespecting of black people. I'm not a fan of it. Never have been. And at the age of 61, I don't think I'm going to come around to embracing that.
That's Wynton Marsalis from about noon today. Talk to him at noon our time. Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra and Concert, Chicago Symphony Center, Friday and Saturday night, 8 o'clock shows. Friday night there's a special guest. Saturday night is all Ellington. When I asked him that question, is rap music a net gain or a net loss? He said, oh, man, I thought I don't want to talk about this. And then he went on to talk about it. And he has more to say about race in America and music and the coursing of the culture and what we can do to perhaps stop it. So we'll get a little bit more of Wynton Marsalis' comments coming up in just a few minutes.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
The Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra, they'll be in concert at Chicago Symphony Center this Friday and Saturday nights, 8 p.m. showtimes. I talked with Wynton Marsalis, who's a brilliant jazz trumpeter, a terrific classical trumpet player. He's an advocate for American culture. You've heard him 1,000 times, I'm sure. I talked to him earlier today, and we were discussing the exploitation of our kids via rap music or hip-hop, my opinion, and the vulgarization of pop culture. And I also brought up, and you've heard this story before, the fact that my nephew, my godson, has really embraced gangster rap, which is a problem for me.
We've always had the line of exploitation for black people, call themselves names, make a fool out of ourselves. That goes all the way back to the 19th century. It's an American pastime. I have never been a fan of it and remain not a fan. That's not to say all of hip-hop is that. I'm not saying all of anything. I'm saying that in the mainstream of our country, there's too much violence, too much pornography, too much misogyny, too much use of the word and disrespecting of black people. I'm not a fan of it. Never have been. And at the age of 61, I don't think I'm gonna come around to embracing that.
Yeah, well, I feel exactly the same way. I argue with my nephew, my godson, all the time, who turns me on to or makes me listen to what I consider to be very vulgar music that I don't think represents the culture appropriately at all. And I've made him listen to my collection, and he said to me recently, and it was checkmate. I thought he won the argument. He said, when you have played Coltrane Live at the Village Vanguard Again, version of My Favorite Things with Pharoah Sanders, who had just died, he said, wasn't Pharoah Sanders just expressing how angry he was? I understand that argument. I accept that argument. But at age 62, I am not going to come around to your way of thinking. So I'm with you, Wynton.
Yeah, I'm not. I have a problem with people being angry. My question, my thing is more exploitation. I get 11 and 12 year olds. It's too much access. I'm just not. We're seeing it, man. I don't. You know, we as a culture, and keep in mind, you know, because we're around the same age, I've been saying this since the early 1980s. Now it's 2020. Cultures, we just don't have the type of freedom to exploit our younger people in that way. Doesn't mean you. Max Roach was expressing anger. People have expressed anger. Beethoven expressed anger. And you have the right to express anger. You have the right to express what you would like to express. But the question of art is, how do you come up with some type of form that channels that kind of timeless anger into something that speaks to the human soul in a devastating and powerful way? To just call people, the kind of stuff that's on this, we all have grown up with it. It's not something new. It doesn't shock anybody. But it's not bearing fruit for us. So I never want to get it confused with, like, well, I think people need to be smiling and happy. Nah, it's nothing to be. That's not what the issue is with me. But the kind of, somebody's got to always be getting killed or shot, or you got to be calling women out their name. You got to be staging fights with people. And I mean, it's too much, man. It's too extra. Life is already hard. Now you're adding difficulty to it by saying, well, my life was difficult. All of y'all's lives need to be difficult. And it's being sold to people who don't live those lives. It's being sold to people who are going on safari with your experience. And then it turns everybody in the hood, everybody in a certain place, into this type of element. And everybody's not like that. The majority of people are not like that. Then you look up and all of your younger people have to have led these spectacular lives with all kind of violence and death and killing and drugs. And some people live those lives. But it's not the type of life that a majority of the people are living. As time passes, more and more people live it. And if that's what we want to do as a culture, we've succeeded in that. Congratulations.
Wynton Marcellus, it's very well said. I appreciate your time. Look forward to seeing you Friday and Saturday night at Chicago Symphony Center with jazz at the Lincoln Center Orchestra and continued success.
All right. Thank you. Good talking to you. Have you
Likewise.
Been?
Likewise.
Yes.
I'm going to pick up my horn today and play a little bit.
Me too.
And then I'm going to cry. And then I'm going to cry. Just a little
Me
bit.
Me too. I'm going to cry too. No last
I'm gonna, right. I'm gonna go. Now I'm gonna try a jet tone. Now I'm gonna try my 3C. Now I'm gonna try my Giardinelli. Something's gonna work for me.
Long tone, real soft.
Thank you, Wynton. Take care.
All right, take care.
What an extraordinary talent and a man of high integrity.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.